We know to learn Torah, and we're here to learn Torah with Dr. Shapiro. Always a pleasure. So Erev Tov, everybody, as we continue our series on reform and the rabbinic response. And there's every generation has its own challenges. And Bakasha, Dr. Mark.
Okay, it's March 7th, 2022. Pleasure to be here. I listened to the talk in the car the other day, and I noticed I spoke with David Cohen, and I didn't mention the reason why I began speaking about it. This book, Ha'kov Lemishor, and he's really wide-ranging Talmud Chacham. This is all about printing mistakes and also censorship that's in Talmud Bavli. As a whole introduction there that deals with that matter, and it goes through daf after daf. So that's that was the book I was speaking about. Now, to return to a topic, Yael, I was speaking a sort of bit off the cuff because I was quoting Rav Yaakov Emden, but now I investigated it here. And I repeat what I said. I understand the pshat is that Chever HaKeni, that we're not dealing with any Israelite. But I repeat what I said, that there's no question. If you look, for instance, in Yevamos, let's see, did I write down what page it is? If you look in Yevamos, Kufke Malama Bay is 103B. I'm not going to explain exactly now what it is. It's a family program, but it is absolutely clear, according to the Gemara in Yevamos, that that Yael is regarded as an Israelite. And you'll see discussions in the different sources. Did she, as a convert, the assumption is either as a convert before with Sisera or after with Sisera, the Gemara, it would mean before, but there's a source, more than one source, that speak about Rabbi Akiva, believe it or not, being descended from Sisera. Mibnei Bonav Shal Sisera, Limdu Torah B'Yerushalayim, Uman Inon Rabbi Akiva. It reminds you of the passage about Haman, but that's a text that's quoting a Gemara. We don't have it in our version, but it's in the Gaonim. Believe it or not, if you take a look at the Malbim in Shoftim, chapter 4, Pasuk Yud Zayin, he says explicitly that Beis Chever Mibnei Yisrael. So it's not such, because after all, how would she be married to him? That would be intermarriage. So I don't know why there is such a push, and she's referred to as a judge, a shofetet. I mean, not just a judge, a great judge, judges. So plenty of sources, and that is the mainstream view in rabbinic literature. By the way, the name Yael, I should have mentioned this also last class, the book that we spoke about, Mayan Omer, which is the questions that Ravad Yosef was asked, and someone recorded all his answers. If you look in volume 12, number 26, he was asked, can you call your daughter with the name Yael? In the Haredi world, the name Yael is like all these modern names. And so Rav Avadia says, why not? He says, more Kedai. She was a Tzadikas. And he says, Halavai Haisalanu Achas Kazo. If only that we had one like this. Shaisa Horeges Es Arafat. If only we had such a woman who would kill Arafat. And and then they ask another question. Well, let's say you have a girl. You have a girl. Should you call her Yael, Talia, Avia, Margalit, or Rinat? Not Rina, Rinat. And he says Yael is the best. And in the notes here, he goes through all the sources which I just mentioned about, who was Yael. So it's a kosher name, and it's a good name. In terms of what we spoke about in Rome, here, let me show you again what they did with the people. I misremembered in Brachos 10b, I said that that Chizkio dragged his father's to Achaz to give him kapara, And I thought I remembered as he just dragged him, but on the ground. But no, if the Gemara is clear that he dragged him on a bed of ropes. So, but then the question was, so then what is this the case in Rome? What does Rav Shaul Moshe Chazan describe? And I looked it up, and it's in Siman Gimel, and it actually they dragged them from the entranceway of the cemetery to the grave. And he says as follows, that they dragged him on a mita. I don't know what that means, a bed of sorts. It's not the coffin. I don't know what that means. Is that the bed of ropes, whatever that means that Chizkiyahu did? But that's the language. Shemegarim hamita, mipesach besachayim ad hakeder. So I'm not sure what that is. But that's in the Krach Shel Romi. Okay. Thank you to Mike for this next correction, which I described the Spanish. If you go to the Spanish and Portuguese synagogue, where is it? I described it as what they do as the Hecha Kedusha. It's actually not. They do exactly what the Rambam says. And now I remember it. When you're there, they start Musaf. And it's not just Musaf. It's you can they have their two little their booklets here that even Mincha, they do it here. This is if here they have the guide to Friday night services, their unique customs, and I can send this to anyone. And also a guide, Further Perplexed, a primer to Sheareth Israel. The thing is that they do exact, and they say that, you know, what are you supposed to do? Because they don't repeat the Musaf, and they explain it. Where is it here? Yes, I'm surprised that during Musaf there was no silent Amidah. The Chazan launched right into recitation. They say, that's right. Rather than a private silent Amidah, followed by the Chazan's repetition, we follow the Rambam's practice, and thereby avoiding what has often become idle time or worse. Now, what you're supposed to do is that, well, it doesn't say it here about Musaf, but it says it about, as I recall, let's see, Mincha, because they do that as well. Yes, there's no silent Amida prior to the Chazan repetition. It is all said aloud into the other community. I remember the first time I was there, they're saying it, and what are you supposed to do? The Chazan's saying it out loud. Are you supposed to say it with him or not? So they tell you you are supposed to. A lot of people just sit there and, listen. There's two types of two ways of doing this. That's the one way of everything out loud. And then there's the way we do it. We call it the Hecha Kedusha, where it's said out loud. And then after Kedusha, everyone's silent. Now, really, what you should do is that you're supposed to start Shemona Esrei with the Chazan and then say Kedusha together. And then it's silent. Many people just doing what their own thing. And then after Kedusha, they start from the beginning. But that's not what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to together with the Chazan. So thank you, Mike, for reminding me. And the last thing to say, this goes out to Moshe. Called attention to something which I did not know. And that's about taking off the shoes. And he called my attention to Rav Yaakov Emden, Moro Kutsia, Simon Sadi Aleph, where he says that in his opinion, the best thing is to daven without shoes on. The problem is, he says that's not the minhag, so you can't do it. And he gives all the reasons that I said that are difficult to explain today. The practice, I assume it's because the Muslim didn't wear shoes, therefore they don't. But he says the reason you shouldn't wear shoes is, first of all, Kohanim Bavodasan. The Kohanim did not wear it. And also he says that we see wherever the Shechina is there, they took their shoes off. So Vadai Nachon Anu Asos Kein. So we too should act the way when the Shechina appears and like the Kohanim. But he says that although this is what you should do, Lo Nachon Al Mahaidna, that that's not what people do. So you can't, if people are not doing it, you can't start it up. But he says, Rai Lasos Basic Nessus. He says, this is the way you should be. Rav Yaakov Emden, as we know, he had all sorts of independent original ideas. And with this one, coming up to Pesach, of course, he said that He didn't believe in kitnios, avoiding kitnios. He wanted to bring back pilagshim, concubines. He had all sorts of interesting things. But that was Rav Yaakov Emden. Now we're picking up with where we left off, everyone. Before I pick up, hold on a second. I want to say something that Naftali called my attention to, and not just Naftali. I saw on YouTube someone mentioned this as well. I remember, and I forgot this. I have the book, but I can't remember everything. So thank you to Naftali and the man or woman who signs Jewel. That's how he signs himself on YouTube. Remember I said that one of the early reforms of Jacobson was that when you were called up for an aliyah, they didn't call you up by name. They just gave you a number, Rishon, Shani, etc. And I said that this, and I assume, I connected this to the Sephardic practice, that the Sephardim don't do it. But it's more complicated than that, or the answer seems to be different, I should say. If you look in Rabbi Hamburger's book, Hayeshiva HaRama from Firth, I forget now, I think it's volume one. He has a whole chapter there dealing with Jacobson. On page 363, he points out that the French, you know, consistorial authorities, at this time, they wanted to give them real names, not just names, you know, son of so-and-so. And the reason was that they said that it creates unity and equality. This is what the French Revolution was all about. At least he says that this created problems because the people didn't know about their names. You called them up, they didn't know which the proper name was, and therefore they came up with a better solution. Instead of calling up by the name, call them up by Kohen Levi, then Shlishi Revi. I mean, that's it sounds strange and everything, but there is a source that he quotes here that defending doing this. He doesn't give this reason about the names. Jewel also says because this was imposed by the French for the value of equality. So he's probably citing the same source. He quotes here of Mendel Steinhardt, who was an early quasi-reformer, and he doesn't give that reason. He simply says that he thinks this is just a better way to do it, but he doesn't say that this is the reason. I don't know if Hamburger, maybe I'll tell you guys Hamburger, does he actually have a source that says that people were confused? They didn't remember their names or anything. I don't know. It still seems to me that the Sephardic approach, adopting the Sephardic approach might have been behind this, because it does seem a little bit strange to say that if I pick a new name and they call me and I don't remember it, maybe it was just that they figured that we're all getting new names here, so let's avoid names. I don't know. Okay, so the last thing we spoke about was Jacobson's synagogue, and the last thing I said was I quoted Sun's, that Sun's comes and he describes Kirov. People who hadn't been to Shul in a long time were going there to this new minyan. Now, in terms of ideology, the prayer book, there are actually two different prayer books that they use in the Jacobson minyan, altered or omitted any passage that spoke about that the Jews will return to the land of Israel from the four corners of the earth to reestablish themselves. That was taken out. When the word Redeemer appears, referring obviously to the Mashiach, the new prayer book has redemption. So redemption, there's no longer an individual redeemer, you only have redemption. However, strange as it may seem, and there's no consistency here, they still leave in prayers referring to Zion. Okay, so that you can interpret Zion as Germany, or it doesn't have to be Zion as in Eretz Yisrael. But the references to the sacrificial service were kept in, as were references to the chosen people. Chosen people also not so crazy, because even the earlier reformers thought that the Jews are chosen by service, for service, that is to bring the monotheistic ideal to the world. But I can't explain why they left in the references to sacrifices. They don't believe in a future temple or anything like that. it would seem to make more sense to take it out, but they didn't. They did take out Kol Nidre. Kol Nidre had always been the source of anti-Semitic attacks because the idea was you can't trust the Jews' oaths, and Kol Nidre provided a proof for that. There's two different versions. Is the Kol Nidre voiding oaths of the previous year, or is it voiding from the future? And we do both of them. So however it is that you could claim if you wanted to, although this isn't what it's only about, like things if we would forget. It's you can't take an oath to a non-Jew or a Jew in court and intend on not fulfilling it because of Kol Nidre. That would have no validity. But that was the accusation. And even Rav Shamshon Raphael Hirsch thought that the anti-Semitism was such, and this was creating an opening for anti-Semitism. For 1 year, when he was Rabbi at Oldenburg, he removed it. And then he put it back in. Either he thought better of this idea of taking it out, or maybe other rabbis criticized him. I don't think we know all the details on it. We just have that report, though. Well, although from the standpoint of the 2022, it doesn't seem like much of a Reform synagogue. Well, they did have the organ played by a non-Jew, and they cut out some aspects of the prayer, but nothing crazy like we'll see in a future generation. But still, it is a Reformist sitter, and it is a Reformist service. And the traditionalists, they turn to the government. Now, the government, the one thing government was concerned about in Germany is, and there was only a few tolerated religion. One of them was Judaism, and then Lutheranism and Catholicism. They didn't want any other religions were not accepted, any Christian type of crazy sects. They wanted to keep everything stable. No revolutionary sentiments, nothing like that. And it's dangerous to have different religious preachers preaching ideas that you don't know what they're saying. The traditionalists were able to get the government to shut the synagogue or the temple down. And this is really at the last stages of government intervention. People already realize that for a modern society in the 18th century, the government can't get involved in these religious issues. Well, they shut down the services. The services have been taking place in the house of a man named Jacob Baer. Now, this Jacob Baer is the father of Jacob Hertz Baer, the father of Meyer Baer, who's the famous composer. Sorry, not Jacob. His father's name was Judah. Sorry, Judah Hertz Baer. And those of you who know classical music, you probably heard of him. If I'm not mistaken, Wagner mostly had bad things to say about Mendelssohn, but I think he also, Meyerbeer also, that's where the synagogue service was taking place. And we're told that a few hundred people showed up to these services. So quite popular. Now, shortly after shutting it down in 1815, the main synagogue is closed for repairs. So they have to then open up little private minyanim. And then, because there isn't the main synagogue anymore, the government gives the reformers permission to once again open up the minyan in Baer's house. And not only did they give permission, but the reformers have seats now on the Berlin City Council, Jewish City Council, and the synagogue service in the Baer house is now officially a community-sponsored minyan, one of three, until the synagogue was rebuilt, they said. And this synagogue service existed from 1870 to 1823. The traditionalists, who will soon become Orthodox, they're very upset, and they start putting pressure on again to the government. You got to shut them down. And fine, this is temporary, but when we're going to open up the main synagogue when it's fixed up, and then we got to shut them down. The reformers figured that they need some big guns on their side. They need some ammunition to show that what they're doing. See, as we're going to see, when we see the Ela Divrei Brit, the claim was made that what these reformers are doing is not Judaism. It's some sectarian type of Judaism, but it's not real Judaism. And that's some accusation, because if you're sectarian, if you're not mainstream Judaism, you have no right to the synagogue services, and the government will shut you down because these were illegal. So they needed some ammunition, and therefore they commissioned the leaders of this reform minion commissioned a defense of the innovations. and they gave it to a Jew named Eliezer Lieberman. We'll talk a little more later about who this Eliezer Lieberman was. He called himself a rabbi. And presumably he was ordained. I mean, Gretz speaks about him like a complete ignoramus. He's not the complete ignoramus. You can look at the Sefer. You see he's not. He had been a teacher and a wandering preacher, and we know that he gave sermons in the main synagogue in Berlin, that is the traditional synagogue, but he later was drawn to the reformers, and we don't know why he left the main synagogue. He published two works. One is a collection of responses of authorities outside of Germany. It's called Noga HaTzedek, and the other is his own work called Or Noga, and they're printed together, and it's a very, very rare book. It's rare, so rare, because the rabbis and others, the Orthodox who had it, no doubt burnt it and got rid of it. I found a copy at Yeshiva University, which I made my own copy, and then lo and behold, it shows up about 10 years ago on Google Books. So you can all see it. We're going to look at it, and you can print it out. Hold on. You can where are we? Here it is. Show you the title page. This is the first text, halachic text, dealing with the Reform movement. Noga HaTzedek. And what does it include in it? First of all, let me tell you, it's a very important historical work. It's the first defense of Reform in the face of attacks. It's designed to show the opponents of the Reform that there's nothing halachically wrong with the Reforms Institute in Berlin, as well as to show the government that the Reformers were part of Judaism. As I said, if the new reforms were shown to be sectarian in nature, the government would shut the synagogue down because it's not a state-recognized religion. Now, in addition to penning his own responsum, which we'll look at Eliezer Lieberman, he solicited the opinions of a number of rabbis outside of Germany. Now, we don't know how many he solicited because he clearly would only publish the ones that he liked, the ones that came back to him being machmir or forbidding what he wanted. He wouldn't have included these, but he did get four back, and let's look at them now. Well, first look at the title page. It says Noga HaTzedek, Shelos HaTshuvos MeRabbanim HaMar Responsa, from the great rabbis, the famous ones who have rabbinic chairs, the sages from Ashkenazic and Sephardic sages. And the first thing one will look at, it's called Shelos HaTshuvos Derech HaKodesh from Rabbi Shem Tov Samachtet. Samachtet does not mean Sephardi Tahor. It means Sefei Tav. It's like Shlita. His end shall be good. And they call him here Av Basin, the Nasi Yisrael, the Kila Kadosha Livorno. It calls him the Rabbi of Livorno. That's not correct. He was not the rabbi in Livorno, but he was a Talmud Chacham in Livorno. He's not very well known today, but in his day, he was recognized as a big Talmud Chacham. He published a volume of Tshuvot of his father, Eidos B'Yosef, and the Chidah Chaim Yosef David Azulai, who was in Livorno in his approbation, speaks very positively about him. Now, before we go further and look at this, why is Eliezer Lieberman sending questions to Italy? We'll see two of the important questions to Italy and to Hungary. Why not ask the German rabbis? Well, I think it's clear. First of all, the German rabbis were on the scene, so they knew what was going on and that these reformers are a problem. Even if technically you can't find a problem with one innovation here or there, they knew their ethos was a problem. Second of all, with the Italians in particular, the Italians were so distant from everything we're going to speak about, they could look at matters from a pure halachic perspective. It's like, think back to, I think we dealt with this, the bat mitzvah question. Anytime the Ashkenazi rabbis had to deal with the bat mitzvah question, they had to deal with the fact, well, that it goes back to the confirmation, and then later Mordechai Kaplan has a bat mitzvah. You have all these meta-halachic things. If you ask a Sephardic rabbi, when the Ben Ishchai deals with it, it's a simple thing, that a girl's bat mitzvah, now she's obligated to mitzvah, and of course she can have a little celebration, a suda, and Ravad Yosef, the same thing. But when you look at the Ashkenazic authorities, they have to answer this in the context of the non-Orthodox movement. So that's what makes it problematic, many of these issues. But if you go to the Italian rabbis, they're just going to answer the question. Furthermore, the Italians had a long tradition, as we'll see, of music in the synagogue. So when Rav Shem Tov Samun discusses, can you have an organ in the synagogue? He's just going to look at it halachically. It seems, based on the question and answer, we'll see. He was only asked about an organ in the shul. He wasn't asked about playing on Shabbos because he doesn't take up the issue. The other one of the other rabbis takes up the issue of playing it on Shabbos. He doesn't deal with it. But there still was an issue of playing it during the week because the tradition, unless suppose that also. So the tshuva that we'll see now of Samun is very helpful to the reformers. Now, what is the problem? What's the problem about an organ? If you listen to Rabbi Desani's talk in that we had a couple weeks ago, there's still an organ in the shul in Rome. It's behind the Ark, and they play it on Rosh Hashanah Rabbah, and they play it on other events, a wedding or something like that. All I can say to you is from the standpoint of an Orthodox rabbi, the rabbis we're going to see here, the idea that you have an organ in the synagogue, even if you only play it on Rosh Hashanah Rabbah, the whole thing is it's a sheretz, as we say, or it's like a coin of Isaac Faro. So there's no place for an organ, this Christian symbol in a synagogue. Now, the thing with the Italian synagogues is they had the organs because they followed what we're going to see. And then when we became one global community, you can't have an Orthodox synagogue in Italy with an organ. So either they got rid of the organ totally, or they don't play it anymore like in Florence, or they play it only like on Hoshana Rabbah, but they didn't rip it out, which is what all the rabbis we're going to see say, of course you have to rip it out. How can you have an organ in a synagogue? But we'll see what the Italian rabbis say. So Rav Shem Tov Samun, go a few pages here. He asked the question from a far land, can you play the organ, the clay shear that's called an organ in synagogue? And he says, some people say that's the Ugov mentioned in Tehillim, but okay, I don't think so. But so that's the question. Can you play an organ in the synagogue? Now, what is the possible problems? Well, first of all, chukos avayim. That's the big one. The churches are using organs. That's why the Jews want to adopt it. Number one. Number two, you have other issues here. After the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash, we're not supposed to play music. We'll see what this means, but at least you could make that argument. And he begins by considering whether it's chukos avayim. And he also considers the second question, after the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash, can you play music? And he says, first of all, that deal with the first question. The only music prohibited by Chazal is when it's accompanied by wine and rejoicing. And we're going to see later what the Shulchan Aruch says. If it's music for holy reasons, that's absolutely permitted. Later, when we get to the next tshuva, we'll look at the Shulchan Aruch carefully, and you have to ask yourself, well, then what about all these? Can you go to a concert, etc.? We'll get to that. But no one disagrees that music for the sake of holy purposes. So in shul, which is obviously you're playing an organ to sing shiras tishbachos, that's permissible. The big question he deals with then is chukos agoyim. And he shows that when a practice has a good reason and it's not connected to sexual immorality, then we can also adopt it. And he says, furthermore, the non-Jews didn't invent music. Music the Levine played in the Beis Hamikdash every day. He says the non-Jews took it from us. On page 6, it's quite a long tshuva, and it's a very good tshuva, I have to say. He says as follows, where he says, Klal, after going through all the sources, I just summarized it for you. He says, Klal ha'olam mikol ha'kasuf. He says, in summation, everything we says, demutar l'shorer u'nagein b'kol klei shir b'vesek nesis. He says, you can use any instrument you want in shul. And by the way, I think that's probably what we do. I don't think anyone today in the modern Orthodox world would have a problem on a Sunday morning, let's say a Rosh Chodesh service, if someone played a guitar, or maybe not. I showed you a couple semesters ago, Rabbi Binny Friedman from my kids' yeshiva playing the guitar. I don't know, at least I don't think they'd have such a problem. Maybe not a regular minion, but a special minion. And he says, Delevar mitzvah lo gazru chazal kol. Because there's no prohibition on music when it's a Delevar mitzvah. And then he says, there's another reason why I permit the organ to you people in Berlin. He says, because, you know, they obviously told him that the music is bringing people into shul. He says, because of the music, people are coming to shul. We follow. Ha-nashim. The Shema Ozen. That's an expression from the Eov. They're coming to hear it. No. And then he says, and Chazal tell us, Olam Yasok Adam. What's it referring to? Olam Yasok Adam, Betorah Mitzvos, Afal Picholo Yishma, Shemitoch Sholo Yishma, Balishma. Because the Gemara says that you should do something. Oh no, my book's all dropped. Okay. Even if it's not Lishma, it'll be, even if you do it not Lishma, it's going to lead to positive things. It's going to be Lishma. So in other words, even if you're going to tell me that there's a problem with the music, you know, maybe it's not the best thing, he says, but people are coming to shul by this. And you're going to say, well, that's why you do it, to bring people to shul. Yes, because you bring them to shul, you pull them in this way. It's like today at Chabad, right? You give them some schnapps, they come to shul, and then you keep them, they'll come back. Okay, hold on a second. Okay, I got too many books here, and we will get to these books. These books are all very important. I don't know if you see my big pile here, but you can't see it. And then he says, this is what it appears to me. Uvahaska mat mala tarafa muvhak dib asra hadein. He says, with the haskama of the local rabbi of Livorno. Now, I happen to think this means that he's saying that everything I just wrote to you is dependent on the rabbi. But you could read it differently. You could read it as, he's saying that it's permissible. And you could read it, he's saying, and this tshuva, which I'm telling you, comes with the haskama of the Rav. I'm not sure how to read this. It's both. It's a little ambiguous. Later, we're going to see that the Rav of Livorno says he opposes it, but he could have changed his mind later. And we're going to see in two pages where they do say that the rabbis support him. So it's unclear. So this is the first tshuva. You have a respected rabbi in Livorno saying that you can use an organ or any instrument in shul. And the fact that the non-Jews use it, it doesn't matter, and it'll help bring people to shul, and that's a good thing. And then the following page, page 7, you have here the haskama, approbation to this tshuva by two sages of Jerusalem who happened to be in Livorno at this time. You had a lot of Meshulachim who would go to Italy because it was very easy to get to Italy, and you had rabbis, and the Chidel was a Meshulach. He just never went back. He stayed in Italy, and these two Meshulachim were in Livorno, and page 7, they give their approbation to everything what Rabbi Samun says. And he says, one interesting thing is they say that in order to differentiate from the way the Goyim do it, you should, you put the organ in the Ezras Nashi. Because the Christians, they put it right in the middle of the church, and they put it in the Ezras Nashi. Okay, very interesting. Following this, you have another Haskama of two. They call them a Chachamim Ashleinim, a Dayanim. So Tamini Chachamim Dayanim from Livorno, who also agree with Rav Shem Tov Samun. They say as follows, we've seen the question which was asked and that which was decided by the Sar HaMaskim. That's a play on Sar HaMashkim. That is the Rabbi Samun who's given his agreement, and they also agree. So now you have six rabbis, four from Livorno, no, five rabbis. Six rabbis. Well, you have Rabbi Samun, yes, then you have the two from Jerusalem and these two, so five. Four of them are from Livorno, three are from Livorno and two from Jerusalem. And they don't see a problem with it. So already you see the idea that this early reform has no rabbinic support is incorrect. But it really starts getting interesting now on the next tshuva. And that's, this is called, well, here, I'll go back to the title page for a second, see how it's described here in the Tiv. Who's the author here? Harav Hagadol Chamufak Moreno Rav Yaakov Chai Rekanati, Ba Machaber Sefer Piski Rekanati, Av Bastin, Dekila Kadosha, Verona. You remember we spoke about Verona, and there's a, if you go to Verona today, there's a one shul, nice shul, and it's the Ashkenazi shul. There were two shuls, as he describes, a Sephardic and an Ashkenazic. The Ashkenazic shul is the one that's standing, although it's not Nusach Ashkenaz today, but it was. So this Rabbi Yaakov Chai Rekanati, we know more about him. He wrote this book, Piske Rekanati Hacharonim, that is the latter, the Psakim of the latter Rekanati, because there's another Rekanati, an earlier medieval Rekanati. Rekanati is a good Jewish name. And he was the Rav. He was rabbi in other places as well, but he was rabbi in Verona. And this Sefer, Piskei Rekanati Achronim, I found it cited in Rabbi Moshe Stern, the Debreziner Rav. He cites it. What's Ramosha Stern citing this Sefer? He didn't read it, but it's cited in the Sedei Chemed, so he refers to it. So this is a long tshuva, and this is very important. He begins by saying that I was asked by the Adas Yishurin, and that's what they call their four people who call themselves, to answer a few questions. The first question he's asked is, how many Jews live in Verona? And he says there's 1,000, two shuls, the larger Ashkenazi shul. When I say Ashkenazi, the Ashkenazi shul, it's only Nusach Ashkenaz, but they also spoke Italian, and the accents were Italian. It's not like Efchasidim in Italy. They've been in Italy for hundreds of years, as Ashkenazi. And a smaller Sephardic shul. He says the sermons are recited in Italian, but the psukim in Hebrew and then in Italian, just like we do. Rabbi gives a sermon, who read the pasuk in Hebrew and then recite in English. And then he's asked how the prayer service is recited. And he says that until Baruch Hu, someone reads it word for word. That's the Sephardic approach. And at Baruch Hu, the Chazan in a special garb takes over. Then he takes up the question, is an organ permissible? So let me, and he's asked, is the Ugav, that's called an organ, is that permissible? So, the question is, he says, first of all, there's a few problems are, if do you have to worry about it because of it's an idolatrous element, lasa da avoda zara, that is the Christians use it to play lifnei avoda zara. Now he's referring to Christians here, and he mentions that already have this notion of a matseva that used to be something positive, but then the idolater started it, so we can't use it. The second issue is what we saw already with Rabbi Samun. Can you have simcha with music today because of Churban Beis Hamikdash? He says, Uchmo shepasak Maran b'shulchan no hakatzar. Just like Maran, that is, Rabbi Yosef Karo decided in his shulchan no hakatzar. Shulchan no hakatzar means the shulchan aruch. What's the long, the big shulchan? The big shulchan, the long shulchan is the Beis Yosef. The shulchan aruch is the abridged version of the Beis Yosef. What does it say in the shulchan aruch? They decreed the rabbi shalom again b'chay shir v'chol minei zemer because of the korban. And then the third issue he raises is, you know, you're going to have music that destroys the davening. You have Hafsaka Satevo, Somnias Hakavana. How do you have Kavana? You're listening to the Chazan singing, and then instead of reading the words straight along when you're singing, so you're going to stop. You know how the Chazanim are, and then you have to wait a minute while the Chazan does his thing before you get to the next word. So these are all the questions he raises. Now, also, this is a very interesting tshuva. Those who've been with me in Italy, we learn this tshuva on Shabbos because it helps us understand some of what we see. And he begins by saying, the paragraph begins in Me'ata, he says that there's no appurtenance. It's not connected to Avodah Zarah. We don't need to worry about that. As long as this particular organ they don't use for idolatry, it's not an issue. He says, the Im Kain, you if it was a problem, you have to also forbid ner shel shiva l'hadik beis haknesses. We also have to say you can't use candles in the shul. Because he's gonna, they light candles in churches. They light candles as a form of their. I've seen it on TV where they come in and they light the candles to the saints and things. So, are we going to say then we can't use candles because the goyim light candles? Of course not. He says vava de leisa. He says it's certainly not correct. The only issue is you can't use the candle that. The particular candle that they used for the Avodah Zarah. But it doesn't mean that candles themselves are forbidden. So it's the same thing. Yes, if they're using an organ, you can't use the organ that they're using for the Avodah Zarah, but another organ, what's the problem? So that's the first thing he says. And he goes on and he elaborates on this. He says that the organ is like he says what about matseva? Matseva, we used to be allowed to do it. And then when the idolaters started, we can't use a matseva. And he says, but matseva is connected to the ground, the altar, and an organ is portable. He thinks that's, and an organ, he says, is also used for secular purposes. He says an organ is like a pamon, a bell, which is used for secular purposes as well. So you can't ban using a bell. You can't ban using candles, and you can't ban using an organ just because the Christians use an organ. This has halachic implications, this idea, which leaving aside the Pisce Reconati, I'll show you what I mean when I say this. I just saw this, believe it or not, over Shabbos, and I figured this would be good to show you. There's a rabbi in Israel named Rav Mordechai Tzion. Here's what he looks like. So you can see he's clearly a religious Zionist, and he works at Rabbi Alvinier's yeshiva in the Old City. His name is Tzion. He's a big Tzioni. When he went to Israel, he became Mordechai Tzion. When he was in America, he was Mordechai Fried Fertig. He was rabbi in Buffalo. But And his early sfarim were about living in Israel, things. But in the last few years, quite incredible, he has published a number of sfarim. Here, he's become like you see how he dresses, but he's like the darling of the Hasidic world. And all his sfarim have haskamas from all the different Hasidim. Why? Well, for instance, here's one of his sfarim. Hilchos Tish. Look how thick this is. It's all about the limudim, halachos, hanhagos, hadrachos, all about a tish. Everything you do at the tish. And it has haskamos here from all these big rabbis, Hasidish rebbes, and a collection of all the practices related to the tish. The Hasidic tish from Friday night and on Yom Tov, where you go and you're with the Rebbe and you have the Shiraim and all that. And you might say, what does this have to do with halacha? He deals with this because what is this halacha? This is Hasidic practices. So then he has this. And then he has, these all came out in the last few years, and how he's able to pull all this together from all this time. Hilchos Kvittel. Not as long, but still pretty long. Kvittel is the little note you give the Rebbe, when you go visit them, and you think you can't fill up a whole sefer, believe it, he fills up a whole sefer with all, is it better to put give a kvittel to a live tzaddik, or put it on the kever, the grave of a tzaddik who's no longer alive? How are you supposed to write the kvittel? How are you supposed to give it? You know, can you send it on? Oh, I just opened up by accident here, page 128. Shalichas kvittel ayde fax tzaddik on Shabbos. Can you send a kvittel on Shabbos? We dealt with this issue. On and on. And then this is my favorite. Hilchos Shtreimel. A whole book here on the whole Indian of a Shtreimel. So what does this have to do with anything? Because he came out with this book this year. Hilchos Nittelnacht. Of course, many of you heard my class on Nittel. And he has all the sources there, not the sources I cite, the secular sources, and he these are just traditional sources, so I think it misses the point of really the origin of it. But he goes through everything, and then he has something on page 144 and 145, very relevant to what we just saw. Can you use Neros, this doesn't mean candles, this means lights. Chris, I can use Christmas lights for, it says, Ishtamesh Dvar Mitzvah in Neros, like, can you hang them in your sukkah? And no, just take that back. I'm sorry. That's the next thing. This is, can you use candles for Shabbos candles, for candles that they made for the church? And his answer is 100% you can, because it was never used in the church. Maybe the factory is making it for the church, but it's just a hazmana. But then my favorite one is the next one, a better one. Can you use the things, the decorations that would include the lights for to hang in your sukkah? Can you use Christmas lights in your sukkah or any other decorations? They do it in Israel, I'm told. And he explains again that Me'ikar Adin, this is absolutely mutar, but it's not his opinion. He's quoting Rav Aaron Lieberman, who's a rabbi in the Chernobyl yeshiva, and he quotes other people here, and he concludes that it's mechuar, it's distasteful, but you can. Now, what distasteful? It's only distasteful for an Ashkenazi. If you're, let's say, in Gerba, where they don't know what Christmas is, they've never seen Christmas lights, they've never seen Santa or anything like that. What's the problem? It's just lights. In other words, it has no context to them. For us in the West, hanging Christmas lights up in the sukkah, maybe it's a little strange. Although these days, Christmas lights, the people who have nice houses today, they don't like all the red, blue, yellow. They have just the yellow. It's nicer. So we have yellow lights in our sukkah also. But that's the exact thing that Rav Yaakov Chai Rakhanati is saying, that these lights are not, these candles, they're not used for the Avodah Zarah. They're using it, we're using it. Just because they put up Christmas lights doesn't mean we can can't put up lights as well. So let's get back to the tshuva. And now, what about the other objection, that instruments? We can't use instruments because of after the Beis Hamikdash's destruction. Well, this is an easy one. Page 11 here, I said Al Hashnia. He says, because of Chorban Beis Hamikdash, also you can't answer it. Because what does the Shulchan Aruch say? Kvar nahagu kol Yisrael lamar divrei tishbachos oshir shodos v'zichru kaseh kadosh baruch al yayin. We know that even on wine, you know, you can sing these songs if you're singing holy songs. And then he says, if you want to say where there's a distinction, let's between singing zimra de puma, singing with your mouth, or zimra de mana, using an instrument, he says that. He says, I'm going to prove to you that there's no difference. How can he prove to you? He says, I'm going to give you a maser rav. A maser rav means if a great rabbi does something. So what's the story, he says here? He says, Modena. There's a city called Modena in Italy. They still have a shul there. I don't know if they have minyan on Shabbos, but Modena, this is, he says it was an Ir Va'en B'Yisrael, a great city of Chachamim and Sofrim, and you had Rabbi, Italian rabbis, Ashkenazi rabbis, Rabbi Padova, Rav Lifshitz, Rav Ephraim Cohen, two of them were from Ashkenaz, and other great rabbis. And what was, did they have there? He says that they had there a Chevras Tof V'chinur. So I believe that you have to translate that as a society or an orchestra of drums and violins. They had a symphony there, a little Jewish little orchestra, let's say. And no one said a problem about it. You're telling me you can't have music? They had an orchestra there. And he says, Ada Acharon. And who does this take you down to? Which, in whose generation they had this little orchestra? Ish Elohim. Kadoshu. Haraf ha-mufa v'mforsam b'doreinu. Hag'on ha-mufa v'mufak mufeta d'r'v'adoro. K'von Rina Rav Yishmael HaKohen. Zechar Tzadim Kodesh Yivracha. The great Rav Yishmael HaKohen of Modena, who Mel told us that Rabbi David Katz gave a whole class on Rav Yishmael HaKohen of Modena. He's the author of the Tshuvos Zera Emet. Rav Yevad Yosef quotes Zera Emet more than the Igros Moshe. Very important sefer. Don't try to name your son Yishmael and then try to explain to your in-laws that you named your kid Yishmael. I mean, it used to be a kosher name. Now it's like the Matseva. It used to be kosher and now it's going out of style. But maybe one day, hey, look at it. We got the UAE and we got Egypt is much better now. Maybe if everything goes well, we'll be able to bring Yishmael back again. Because as we know, it's a kosher name. So he says here, listen, what's he cite here? He said he quotes Zera Emet, the Tshuva. Here's the question that he was asked in the Zera Emet. Chol HaMoed of Sukkos. Itra Milta, there is an event happened. What that means is that someone died. That's the euphemism. Someone who, a close relative of one of the members of the orchestra, died. This orchestra would come together and they would play on the night of Hoshana Rabba. That's when every year they'd come and they played. So now someone died in a relative, a close relative of someone, a member of this orchestra died in Chol HaMoed. Now we know that there's no Avelos until after the holiday, but the Shulchan Aruch says that you still follow practices of mourning in private. So if this person who's a member of the orchestra doesn't play, unlike what he does every year, this will be Avelos to Verhesia. It'll be public mourning because everyone knows that he's supposed to play his instrument and he doesn't come. So he was asked, can this person go and play like all, every other year? And what does he play? You see it here, the fourth line from the bottom in the second paragraph. He plays the Aleph Bet Vav Hey, the oboe. And of course, you all know for any good orchestra, you need your oboe. So if he's not there, everyone's going to know there's no oboe player. So that's Avelos to Verhesia. And Rabbi Recanati says, look there, and he goes into a pill pool and everything, and he concludes that the man can play, even though he's an Avel, since this is public, he can play in the orchestra, because the real Avelos doesn't start till afterwards, he can play in the orchestra on Hoshana Rabbah. And Rabbi Recanati says, if you're going to tell me that music is with instruments is forbidden, then what's the question? It's not just a question of Avelos, it's a question at all you can't. But certainly you can have music, and it's a simcha shel mitzvah. Not a problem at all. I want to show you in the Shulchan Aruch, what the Shulchan Aruch says about this. Hold on a second here. Here we are. This is in 560 in English. They decreed not to play music with instruments and musical devices and all things that make music to rejoice with them. However, there are those who say that the prohibition is specifically for those that regular play them, like for kings who stand and rest instruments or in the house of a feast. So, and then later it says it's for holy purposes. So what's prohibited either at a feast or someone who, like a king who, it's part of their life, wherever they get up and they go, there's music. So he asks, then what about going to a concert, a Billy Joel concert? There's clear heterim. If you went to the Billy Joel concert and you were served a feast with wine, let's say, then it could be a problem. But otherwise, there's summer machmir, Ramosha. But there are definitely heterim, and schools do this. They raise money. They have concerts, not just Jewish music. Okay, so let's return then to in the few minutes we have left. So we get back to now we got the third consideration. 12, and this is where and then he's going to get into on Shabbos. But before we get to that, remember the third issue was about kavana, and destroys the hafsakos hamilos, the tevos, with the music, you break up the way you're supposed to read it. He says as follows. He says, I have a little book that's called Kriyat Shema, Sefer Kriyat Shema, printed in Salonika in Tavkuf Tedvav, that's 1715. Now, we have this book for a long time, not 1755. I have this book, not because I have it, it's a rare book, but a few years ago, Yaakov Spiegel printed this whole dispute, which we're going to see right now. He reprinted in this book called Vayishma Koli and stuff from manuscript, great stuff. But what's the case? It's a very interesting case it deals with Corfu. We're going to go back to Greece one day. We've been twice. We'll go to Corfu. Corfu is a very important Jewish city. We speak about the Esrogim when we're in Corfu that came from there. And by the way, Rav Avram Sofer, the one who published all the Meiris, he was a rabbi in Corfu in the 20th century. And they called the Chasam Sofer. there was a, this is a, the practice in Corfu, he describes, and it's in the book I have here, was that they would read on holidays Kriyat Shema with a song. When it says Benigun v'Nim Al Pi HaMuzika, it doesn't mean with instruments, just singing. So they would sing Shema with a whole chazan, and actually with a choir, all the whole bit, they do a whole sing-along. And then it says that for whatever reason, they stopped doing it for a little while, and then they wanted to bring it back. They stopped doing it. And so the question is, they stopped doing it and they want to bring it back. You can think of all the reasons why they'd stopped doing it. No chazan, whatever the case is, then they wanted to bring it back. And there were those who opposed bringing the singing back. Why? Because the Sicha Be'Teila Shel Rabbi Me'amei Haaretz, the masses, while the chazan and the choir are doing their singing, they're talking during Kriyat Shema, talking other times. And therefore they said, you know, it was one thing when we were doing this, but now that we got rid of the singing, it's not such a good thing. Let them just say Shema the way you should say Shema and not bring it back. But the rabbi of the city and others, they wanted to bring back the old minhag. And this became a huge dispute. You can read Spiegel's book, because all the rabbis in the Sephardic world from all the different places weighed in on this matter, right? He says just in this first paragraph that that the rabbis of Jerusalem agreed with them that you could bring back the singing. And then they quote a rabbi from Salonika, etc. Now, we're going to do next time when we start, I got to make a note here, Rob, we're going to pick up with the next paragraph and get into the dispute. First of all, let's even assume he's going to deal with that. It does create problems. The Amoratsim are talking. And are we concerned about that? Or do we follow them and hug you? And you'll see very interesting things. I'll introduce you to a sefer. The first Torah periodical ever published. And I'll show you some pictures of that. But he deals with it, and we'll deal with this fascinating case, and I'll see if any of you can figure out this this strange city that's mentioned there. I'm not going to say now. We'll get to it next time. And then he takes up the question of playing an instrument on Shabbos with a non-Jew. And wait till you see, well, you know what he's going to say. Wait till you see how he justifies it. And then we're going to move into the two more rabbis, one kosher and one who's becomes non-kosher. That is Aaron Chorin. But we still have a ways to go. Oh, and then you're going to see, wait till you see this. The big issue we're going to get to next class is playing instruments on Shabbos, explicit halacha of many, many people, that for a wedding, you can have a non-Jewish band play for you. And even during a Sheva Brachos, so why is it that we don't do it? And how can you say that you can't do it in Shul when it's Beferish Halacha that you're allowed to have it? Hey, try, and next time you have a wedding or a Sheva Brachos on Friday night, try inviting some non-Jewish singers with their musical instruments. It won't go over so well. And we'll see why not. Why things change. But it wasn't that long ago that this was considered a kosher practice. But we'll stop here. Let me get the questions. We have begun with smack in the middle of the Noga HaTzedek. So Ellie says, in Sheret Israel, they only say the first part of Aleinu. That's interesting. I forgot about that. They do say that in Italy. In the Italian Nusach, they only say the first paragraph of Aleinu, and also in Florence. Florence is Sephardic Nusach, but they also only say the first. And someone privately emails me that also in Rome, they only give out Oliot by number. And someone also says that Mordechai Breuer has an article on Rav Hirsch and Kol Nidre. Yes, I remember that. Rabbi Kelman says that Rav Aaron Walken held the Bat Mitzvah Zehar Vayavar. I don't remember. I take your word for it. I don't remember the word Yehari Vayavar, but there, he says that anyone who does it is a Zakein Mamre. Rav Aaron Walken was not an extreme rabbi. He was a rabbi in Pinsk. They even came with a biography. He has a grandchildren and great grandchildren live in Queens. They came out with a very nice biography, and I told the author I was very happy with the biography because it shows the relationship between Rav Aaron Volkin and Rav Kook. Rav Aaron Volkin's tshuva was called Zagan Aaron, but Rav Aaron Volkin went very strong against bat mitzvah, but lots of people were very strong against it. Rivka says, I heard that in the Altnoy Shul, before the times of the Maharal, there was music played at Friday evening services before Myriv. Hold on, Rivka. You heard sort of correct. I will tell you, though, it's after the Maharal. In the days of the Noda Yehuda, they played music 100%, and they used an organ. But we will get to that. That becomes the major proof for the reformers that if it's okay in Prague, in the shul, that the Gedol Yisrael were all there, how could it not be okay for us? But it did not go back as far as the Maharal. But we will get to that. And someone privately emails me that Karl Bach Hoshana Rabbah and Rosh Chodesh. Well, not just that, it has music. If you look at Slichos, the Karl Bach Slichos are televised or on the internet. And they have violin and other instruments there as well. I think it's very nice. And Chabad sometimes plays music. Havdalah, M.H. Lazerson points out. Havdalah is not in shul with davening. I showed you the, I'll find it again and I'll play it next class of my son's yeshiva, what they did on Rosh Chodesh. I think it's very nice, but it's not, I understand it, how it could be a problem. Because you'll see what the rabbis have to say about this. Ruth says, regarding the organ in the women's section, the West End Shul of present-day Frankfurt still has the remnants of the organ in the women's balcony. In pre-war times, the building was occupied by a reform congregation. Even though the shul is now Orthodox, they never removed the organ. They just painted over the whole thing, but it's obviously still there. And then you can see this in other places as well. M.H. Lazerson, who I gather knows a lot about Italy, because you mentioned that before, is more or less defunct today, almost never a minyan, and only a Kabbalah child with mixed seating, but it's a very wealthy community since they own the buildings. We went there just by accident because we couldn't go to Ferrara, but it was really nice going there. The thing about Italy is that most of these communities now are tiny. We go to Petigliano, and they have a minyan, barely, but they have a rabbi who lives there, at least they did the last time I was there a few years ago. Padua has a rabbi, Ferrara. These are very, very small communities. As for musical Havdalah, that's not really davening. That's Havdalah, so it's different. When you see what the rabbis, how they reject all this idea of instruments, but again, I think it's the same issue with the bima in the middle. It's an issue when you're fighting the reform. When you're not fighting the reform, it's different. Now, as to drawing people to shul, Ellie says, I experienced the opposite. The shul in Zurich did away with Yisker because they didn't want people driving to shul from everywhere. And someone privately emails me that Hasidim do use Christmas lights for the sukkah. I didn't know one way or the other, but as we saw, it's mutter. And M.H. Lazerson says that the Chabad rabbi in Italy told him that for Yahrzeit candles, he could substitute the red candles sold in the supermarkets for the various saint days if I remove the religious wrapping with insignia and symbols. I don't even know if you have to remove it, although it's machuar. The reason I say this is because the Amshinover Rebbe, when he was, we have pictures of him, I think it's in Shanghai, I think, there was one of these liquors or I don't know, I don't drink, but there's something made by Benedictine monks. Someone's going to type it in what it is. And they have a big cross apparently on the bottle because the Benedictine monks. And I've seen the picture, at least I think I saw the picture, someone described it, where they don't, it's not taken off. So but you're right, it's machuar, it's distasteful. So you should take it off. And I'm told by privately that there's still a small minion in Modena with a rabbi. Hadassah says, correct, you don't name your kid Shabtai Tzvi, even though each name, Shabtai and Tzvi, are good names, but you don't name them together. And Jacob Sasson says that Rishon Moshe Chazan also served as a rabbi in Corfu. You know who else served as rabbi in Corfu? We have the big one is Rav David Cohen. He's known as the Radach. He served as rabbi in Corfu. many others. So let's see, just any more. Chaya says, I didn't think that it was about bat mitzvahs per se. It was about what was basically a communion. So avodah zarah was a problem. Not sure what you're referring to. The problem
That was Rabbi Aaron Walkin. Sorry, that was just
Aaron Walkin. He's talking there about confirmation, actually, not communion, confirmation sort of thing. Often the bat mitzvah and the confirmation, it's clear he's talking about bat mitzvah, though, what we would call bat mitzvah. It's when the girl reaches a certain age. We'll get the, does he use the word bat mitzvah or not? He's responding. I have to check it again. Well, I think it is, but.
I'm reading through his truth as you speak.
So yeah,
I'm looking.
Does he use the word bat mitzvah or confirmation? I thought it was bat mitzvah. He's referring to a bat mitzvah. I mean, that's what the confirmation was, basically. You take a girl and you celebrate her becoming a young woman. So it's the same idea. The 3DH, when he deals with it, he's talking about specifically about bat mitzvah. And that's what he's referring to. If you don't want to quote Rav Aaron Walkin, you can quote Yisrael Veltz and others who specifically are dealing with the bat mitzvah in response to the 3DH. There were bat mitzvahs in Italy, by the way. Although we assume that it's Mordechai Kaplan is the first one, they actually had them in Italy. M.H. Lazen says, Petiliano has no minion. There hasn't been a rabbi anymore in Petiliano for decades. Not true. There was a rabbi in Petiliano 3 years ago and 4 years ago and 5 years ago. He also, I know him personally. He also serves as the mashkiach of the winery. And you're right. Sorry. I meant Siena. Not Petiliano. I take that back. You're absolutely correct. Not Petiliano. It's in Siena. There is no minion. There's nothing in Petiliano. There's one Jewish woman, if she's still alive. In Siena. I meant Siena. Thank you for that correction. In Siena, there's a tiny, tiny, tiny community, and they have a rabbi. Correct. Thank you. Yeah, and a cross on a chess piece. Okay. I'm finishing up. Yes. Okay, I think two more. Danny says, I recall reading somewhere there's a bat mitzvah in Odessa before Mordechai Kaplan. I don't know about Odessa, but there was a bat mitzvah in Italy in the 19th century, and the Ben Ish Chai is referring to Ben Ish Chai speaks about a celebration when a girl becomes bat mitzvah. That's before Mordechai Kaplan. Rabbi Nissim printed a tshuva from another sage, what was his name? Not Abu Afia, I forget his name, where he speaks about, in France, they would do things. So Mordechai Kaplan, we like to attribute it to Mordechai Kaplan, but these things were going on, and I'm told that Siena now has no rabbi. He returned to Israel. So that's unfortunate. He was a nice man. So with that final, that's it then for the comments and the questions tonight. Rabbi Kelman, take it away.
And so this, I'm just looking, I was reading, through the Truva. I couldn't read the whole thing as you were talking, but this is, Benny Gesundheit. I don't know if anybody has seen this book. Benny put out a little, pamphlet on bat mitzvah and halakha. He's got all the Truva. Yeah. So he actually writes it's confirmation,
Confirmation,
But it's the third thing. The three things he's writing against are having a woman sing in the choir next to the chazan kobi she'erva, number two, the organ, and number three, confirmation. But he may not use the word yeharag v'yal yavor, but he does call it avizrad avodah zarah and avizrad arayot, which is the same as saying it's yeharag v'yal yavor. And, of course, zakeh mamre. He's pretty harif about how terrible.
I think it's in that tshuva, or I'll check to be 100% sure. He does say that anyone who mutters this is a zakei mamre. But
shehamatir bezehu zakei mamre.
So that's the same as the bat mitzvah.
Well,
what is a confirmation is about mitzvah? That's it's no different. It's a recognition.
Right. It's basically.
In other words, confirmation, they did confirmation in Orthodox shuls too. They did it out in you can see the pictures on the wall, of, at least you could, of the United Orthodox Synagogues of Houston, including a well-known rabbi in New York, who used to be a rabbi, but all the rabbis were there. But what is a confirmation? It's just the term is a Christian term, but it's simply the, at a certain age, let's say 12, 13, 14, whatever, you recognize the girl that now she's a member of Kol Yisrael and you do something for her. That's what a bat mitzvah is. And if you look at all the issues, Rabbi Chaya of Weinberg says, this is a problem because it comes from confirmation. So, but he says it's really not a problem because why are we doing it? We're doing it for a good reason, and we're not imitating the confirmation. We're just, it's a good idea. So, and you're right. Danny says that the confirmations were usually done a few years older than bar or bat mitzvah, but that's, the issue isn't the confirmation itself's a problem, but, the issue is making a change in Minhag Yisrael. So confirmation is clearly a change, but bat mitzvah is you're doing something for girls. So, and since the first people to do it were not the Shomrei Torah mitzvos, or so it was thought, then it became an issue. But you're correct. Thank you very much. It was Achaya that he's speaking about confirmation and not bat mitzvah. But he would have the same opinion about bat mitzvah.
No difference. Well.
Yeah.
And of course, I don't have to tell you that Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg said you're not allowed to treat a bat mitzvah any different than a bar mitzvah, that it's haflaya, it's discrimination. It's
yes, he used that word, but he also said that it shouldn't be in the shul.
Right.
It should not be in the shul because it's a new practice. So everyone.
But he said about your party, you know, you can't.
They didn't take the gedder he put on. Yes, he said it's haflaya. He said it's discrimination. Which is very important, because before he said that, all the Orthodox rabbis were saying, like the Plessy versus Ferguson, it's not discrimination, it's just different roles. Right. And here, Rabbi Chaya of Weinberg says, no, it is discrimination, and it's wrong. He says, absolutely, it's, Thank you, okay. M.H. Laserson, and thank you again for your correction. You're the man for Italy. Okay, thank you, Rabbi.
Okay, thank you. Okay, we'll see you tomorrow morning. Please, God, those who can make it, Dr. Aaron Kohler, part 5 of his fascinating series on Megillat Esther, followed the triple header, followed by Rachel Sharansky-Danziger on Liberty, Sefer Shmot, ins and outs, and then Alex Israel on Eliyahu. So that's tomorrow. Then our all our regular shiurim during the week. The Parsha shiur this week will be given by Rabbi Shaul Robinson of Lincoln Square Synagogue, and always invite a friend. We look forward to learning with you, and we should hear good news, and everybody should be well. And hope to see you soon. And Lila Tov and Dr. Mark will be back on Wednesday, please God, when we have our final of the 5-part series, the 5 interviews doing, will be in Madrid, Spain this week. So, hopefully at some future date, we'll be going back on one of our trips there. So everybody's welcome. That's at 2 p.m. Eastern time. There are actually, I don't know if people, you know, if you haven't come, they're very interesting to hear from the local people on ground who live in these communities, what life is like there. So that's this Wednesday. Okay, everybody, Laila Tov. We hope to see you soon, and everybody be well. Bye-bye.
Tadaraba, Laila Tov.
Vakasha.